Good morning. So today we have two main topics we would like to receive your input on: the notion of narrative coherence and identifying and reporting matters that could affect the entity's long-term success, including intangible resources and relationships. I will start with an introduction to the discussion materials we provided on narrative coherence, followed by the first question for ASAF members. So we had initially discussed the notion of narrative coherence last December as a tool to support completeness in management commentary. Since then, taking into consideration the feedback we have received from the different advisory groups, we have revised our proposals, and we want to clarify that this notion is intended to be broader and could help management identify information that needs to be included in a management commentary. So once management identifies a matter that needs to be included in management commentary, narrative coherence would help tell the whole story about the matter across all content elements. As we explain on slide 14, when management has identified a matter, which would first be considered in one content element, for example, a trend in the operating environment the entity operates in, they then need to consider discussing what part of the business model is affected, what is the strategy for managing the matter, the progress in executing the strategy, any risks arising, and the implications of the matter. We recognize that narrative coherence can be seen to relate to understandability and presentation, but we also see it as a means to help management provide information across all content elements, which avoids leaving users with unanswered questions about that matter. Besides a general description of the notion of narrative coherence within the guidance on materiality, we are planning to include within the guidance on content elements prompts for preparers to consider what information about a matter identified in one content element should be provided in the other content elements. These prompts are explained in slides 15 to 20. For example, if an entity is discussing the implementation of a new restructuring program to support an efficiency objective as part of its strategy discussion, it needs to provide information on the effect of on the business model. For example, the categories of customers that can no longer be served as a result of the restructuring. We would like to emphasize that these slides are only a snapshot of what the revised practice statement would include to support narrative coherence, and there will be additional detailed guidance on what should be addressed in the respective content elements, such as business model and strategy. The guidance presented in the slides will be embedded in the respective sections on content elements. So moving on to the first question for today, as set out on slide 3, we'd like to ask you whether you agree that the proposed guidance would support the provision of relevant information to primary users. And do you think that any additional guidance should be provided, or if there are any aspects of the proposed guidance that are not necessary? Thank you.
Against narrative coherence. Linda.
Oh, I'm all for narrative coherence. Oh, some might argue otherwise from my past life, but there you go. So before I answer the specific question, I just wanted to give some general comments relative to my own personal belief that this is a really important project. And I say that because in my past life, where I was a senior financial person dealing with non-financial senior management, this was where non-financial senior management got the most involved, because in our case, we have local securities law guidance for the management commentary. We call it MD&A. But it was also the main vehicle that drove the discussions to investors, investor presentations. And selfishly, as a senior financial person, that was where I got the business people's attention to actually help them understand some of the more complex accounting things that we needed to disclose. And so it was a way to bring that all together. And then from a relevance perspective, I think for the standard setter, in this case you, but in our case when we were doing our framework on performance measures, we were the standard setter trying to figure this out. It tries to bring everything together from a messaging. And frankly, we get accused often as standard setters of overcomplicating things, requiring too many complicated disclosures that people don't use. And so we're all kind of dealing with this notion of, is the work we're doing relevant to the people who are using the financial statement. So it kind of brings this all, I think this project brings it all together. And so that's why I think this is particularly important for all of us kind of to wrap our heads around and think about this. And so I just wanted to give that comment in particular, because when you're going to communicate what you're proposing, then I would encourage you to think about how you communicate it, at being as important as to what you're communicating in the actual final document, okay? And so when you talk about narrative coherence, I understand what you're meaning by that, but I think it's a little bit like faithful representation. I didn't spend a lot of time talking to non-financial people about what faithful representation means. It's a little bit kind of technical speak, where I would encourage you to use as much plain English as you can possibly use to describe what you mean. I understand the concept, but think about communication as being really, really important. So I just give you that in terms of a backdrop. So we do think that there's a lot of great material here, really great material. And we think in particular that when we stack it up against the local guidance that we have in Canada, we think there's a lot of complementary aspects to that guidance. Although what we think that you have, if you want to stay principles-based, I think you have to guard against this becoming a checklist approach, because you're giving, like, it's tricky to get the balance right between giving too much guidance so they say, here's your new checklist, but then if you don't want to give it totally principles-based, then people don't know what you mean. So we'd encourage you to think about some of the things, including how does this interact with your materiality guidance? Is it clear that there's a distinction between things that are immaterial, immaterial? And how do you really want them to go about talking about each of the things? You talk about business model, strategy, operating environment and risk, and performance and progress. Just try to stay away from the notion that you're being overly prescriptive if this is going to be principles-based. It's not entirely clear in our minds how you've totally integrated what the users are asking for in some cases. And so one of the things that we ask ourselves when we're writing guidance is, if the users think this is important, what are they doing to fill the void now? And have you actually identified what they're going out and getting someplace else? And then have you thought about that in terms of writing the guidance and how you embed that and what you'd like them to talk about in your management commentary? And so I would ask you to think about that. And I think that's in particularly important when you talk about the notion of identifying the intangibles in terms of how the company is managing the business and finds value in the business. Because if the users sense that there are these intangibles, whether you would define those as intangibles that you would actually be able to recognize and ultimately put on the balance sheet someday, or other things like workforce or whatever, the users are actually, again, going and getting that information someplace and using that, their own supposition of what that is, to compare to competitors of the company they're following, you know. And so, again, going back to the notion of how are current users filling the void to help you understand how you might frame the guidance, in particular in these areas. And so, I just urge you to try to do that, and then again go back to the messaging that, while I think there's great guidance in what you're doing right now, to make sure that when you write that guidance, understand that in many cases, the people are going to be using this to deal with non-financial people, and therefore make it as plain English as you can.
Alexandru.
Well, re-stressing strong support for this project is view of many people in my jurisdiction. My personal view is this is the most important project, I think, for the future. Strong support for keeping the principles-based view, as already mentioned before, and strong support for the concept of coherence here. But so strong that I believe that should be put more emphasis on explaining what it is and what is not coherence here. And I like your example here. Put an example in slide 18, which is this example says that a retailer has identified a reduction in revenues attributable to online competition. actually, in practice, companies will say, well, our revenue has a small decline attributable to general macroeconomic condition and trade wars with China. That's what they say. Because if they said it's online competition, they will put the pressure on that. So it's interesting to give a more guidance. Keep it principle based, but give more guidance of what is not, for people to understand exactly what they are doing. Because I saw an article the other day that said that when companies are doing well, there is a lot of use of the first person. When companies are not doing well, they use the third person more frequently. There is a statistical difference between that. So if everything's doing all right, it's my success. If things are not doing well, it's their problem. So I think this is a very good example of what narrative coherence is. But I would add a little bit more elaboration what the concept of narrative coherence is and what is the concept of narrative incoherence is. What is narrative incoherence, for example? So I would add a little bit more on the concept and a little bit more on those illustrations here, because I believe this is exactly what does not happen in the real world. Companies exactly, they do not do this. Okay, so it's I think it demands further deeper thought here.
Paul.
Thank you. I mean, it's very difficult not to like the concept of narrative coherence, and I think it's clearly very important. And I don't know whether it's intentional, but when reading all the material that follows, it's looking at it appears to give the impression that we're looking at the concept of narrative coherence in respect of a whole series of different items, whereas the concept of narrative coherence, to me, particularly in the management commentary, is an overriding principle that the management commentary should be coherent right the way from the start of identifying what the business model is, what the strategy is, what the key objectives over the relevant period of time, what the risks are, and how one's doing against the those objectives. And so I think if we could keep narrative coherence to the big picture, rather than trying to sort of narrow it down to individual items, I think it will pick up some of the concerns around perhaps the risk of a checkbox approach. The other thing, which is perhaps slightly linked to your first question, but maybe slightly as a tangent, is I'm not sure that there's perhaps enough around value creation and how the directors see that. What are the key things about driving value in the business, particularly looking forward, and what the directors are doing to manage that?
Do you have a similar concept in your strategic report?
Yeah.
And what is it called?
Well, we've got some. I don't think we've got one word like coherence. We talk much more about telling the story, the linkages between the different parts of the document, rather than capturing it in one word. But I like the phrase, but it's trying to tell the whole story and make sure it all fits together, that there isn't over-duplication. So we probably tried seven different phrases in our principles of communication, which we set there. But I think narrative coherence is good, just like generally.
I like Linda's. I think a lot of managers, when they hear the word narrative coherence, might already be a bit nervous.
Don't underestimate how important a simple thing like that is.
Yes.
Seriously.
Basically, it means it has to hang together.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, that so they're going to understand when you say it has to hang together and be consistent.
Well, yeah, I mean, but this is serious. I mean, we have to think about the people who have to do this. And,
Yeah. You're telling people to tell the truth. Yes, you're telling people to tell the truth. Yes, yeah. It is life.
Huh?
You're telling people to tell the truth.
But it's the truth over what? So yeah. Clearly you want people to tell the truth, but it's got to be the truth over a big picture of what you're trying to articulate.
It's about giving
I'm strongly in favor of telling people to tell the truth. You know what I mean? Especially giving direction about the truth. Is.
Hey, we clearly don't care about this topic since we're all chiming in.
Chiara?
Yes, again on the narrative coherence. There was a sense of maybe sort of confusion between two different elements. One was the communication principles that Paul was describing, but from the other side, the assertion that the narrative coherence help management identify relevant information, and also the way it is used in the slides, seems to be akin to a sort of completeness check. So there is an ambiguity between these two different elements. Then on slide 15, 16, and 17, the table refers to risks only, and we think that equal emphasis should be placed on risks and opportunities. And then a few comments on the language. I think something has already been said by Linda. On slide 8, it's unclear whether the management commentary principles will prescribe that the content elements, business model, strategy, and so on, will be required in all instances, or only to the extent that they are relevant to the situation that we are describing. So whether everything is always needed, or only to the extent that it is relevant for the particular content element. Then the definition content element itself seemed to be not entirely clear. Similar to what Linda was saying, the members encouraged to use clear and concise language, actionable. Two concepts in particular were not clear to understand. One was the information has the potential to be material. Need to explain a bit more what does this mean. And then capable of being useful to primary users, referred as potentially reportable matters. Also in this case, some color more around what do you mean exactly.
We very much support the introduction of the notion of this narrative coherence. And this narrative coherence will enable management to present the management commentary in a way that all pieces of information be provided, very interconnected, integrated. Users of management commentary will be able to capture a better picture of the reporting entity and its business. One concern we have is that there could be some overlapping of information in the management commentary if preparers strictly follow the specific guidances provided, as suggested in the agenda paper, for each of the content elements. So we suggest a sort of illustrative examples be provided in the practice statement on management commentary. This comprehensive illustrative examples could be an alternative to the specific guidances.
Thank you. I think my initial reaction is that, in fact, there are three categories of information in a management report. And you are covering one with the narrative element, which is fine. So three categories being narrative information, words. Then you have quantitative information, which is either monetary or non-monetary, like tons, square meters, number of people, hours, mm-hmm. etc. So I think the recommendation in order to improve a management commentary would need to concentrate on the three categories of information, because they in fact are the key differentiator with the financial statements, because financial statements only address monetary information. When, by definition, a management commentary is dealing with three basic categories of information that are very different in nature. And in terms of also control.
Two, I think. What was this? Or did you do?
No, quantitative monetary and quantitative non-monetary. So I make a key distinction. Yeah. Because, you know, by saying quantitative only, it would be restrictive in my view.
Yeah.
because, well.
So, yes, a good point.
But just so, to be clear, you didn't mean narrative in the narrower sense, but it shows a risk of that word.
No, yes, and I'm going to comment upon coherence in a moment. So, if you're thinking about narrative, and maybe because you imply that all the management commentary is narrative, which in fact you should subcategorize, in my view, in order to create more accountability and reliability on each and every type of information. So that was remark one. By the way, lots of good ideas. Second remark is the term coherence. I think you're, well, of course, it's like motherhood and apple pie. You love coherence. Who wants to say I'm totally incoherent? and also, but the question is coherence with what? What are the premises at the end of the day? So, so the term coherence for me, in this, you are addressing completeness and consistency. In other words, when you are saying what you are presenting is a matrix. You are saying, if you're talking about business model, think about the other categories. If you're thinking about strategy, don't forget to discuss risks and performance position, etc. So, it means that what we are concentrating about, and that's my third point, is interrelations between factors, and not, you know, a silo approach where I'm going to discuss strategy and forget the rest, then discuss performance and forget the rest. All of this, and the added value of management commentary, apart from moving outside of the monetary arena, is to insist on factors and on interrelations. And everybody is tending to concentrate too much on factors one by one and forget and tends to forget interrelations, which are, in fact, where the real skill of the management is, because that's by combining the factors. I mean, the factors are fine, but if you don't combine them well, it's like a poor cocktail or poor cooking or a British Prosecco. No, that's a kind of joke. I'm sorry.
I warned him from saying that to you.
He told me that. That was a provocation, so I need to answer.
He was not that's polite words.
sorry for that private joke. So narrative is ambiguous a little bit. And coherence is not reflecting exactly what your underlying intention is. So I think that we probably have a terminology issue.
Yeah, may I ask just one point here? I think what he started to do is put the attributes of coherence, completeness, consistency. I think that would be interesting. I think he will start to create this.
I think you started out with the word linkage, right?
Yeah.
Which is also a word. Who uses that in daily practice?
Well, if I may, there is a concept which is advocated by some, which is integration and connectivity, which is a good concept in itself, quite frankly. You know, connection, connectivity, or interconnection, or interrelation, or but also integration. Because when you integrate various factors in your decision making, you probably are better than if you take a silo approach, and that's what we are trying to promote.
Marcia.
Thank you. Many good comments have been made. I appreciate Linda's comments, especially I like Linda's point about what are users doing today to fill in the gap. My comments, and as I read through the material for today's meeting, I did it in the context of my experience having been a preparer at two very different companies, one being highly acquisitive, one being organic growth. And I tried to think through how would this apply in those contexts. And as a preparer, what would my conversations be with management? What could be difficult to apply? I applaud the intent that this be principle-based. I think that it's very easy to go through a checklist, and I know that you're trying to discourage, as I read through this material, a checklist approach. But where I started to have a little bit of difficulty trying to think about how I would apply coherence the way it's written is in the integration of strategy and trends. And I think that's because some of the trend disclosures can definitely be at a much more refined level, because something can be a significant item to understand when you're looking backwards, but it may not have anything to do with what you've said about your strategy looking forwards. It could be a one-off item. And I started thinking through a situation with an acquisitive company. And once you have announced a particular acquisition, I understand the ongoing interest in how is that being integrated. But I can also appreciate why there could be a very valid reason that the entity would not want to give a heads up about its next transaction. It would not want to change what could be the economic cost of that transaction. So a word we hear often in our outreach and feedback is competitive harm. So trying to strike that balance with the examples, and it was really, I think, the sensitivity to the discussion about strategies that I thought would be the most difficult conversations. And then I tried to think, well, what's the worst that could happen? And I realized this is a voluntary disclosure, but I do not think you want to, again, to use one of our phrases, throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't think you want to, in essence, inhibit the disclosures that are being made today because someone feels that the cross-reference back into the strategic discussion could be competitively difficult or not advantageous. So striking that right balance, I think, is important.
To pick up on three things, I think what Linda said, that, you know, we're asking narrative reporting, I'll keep using the word narrative, I'll come back to that in a moment, to be clear and concise. And so our guidance needs to be clear and concise in that respect. It's very hard to ask for people to do things that we're not doing. I'm much more relaxed about the literal use of the word the non-literal use of the word narrative. I think most users understand if we use that term narrative, it's the front half of the report and accounts, but I hear what you say. But I think the most important thing is, in terms of coherence, is it's not just within that front half, but between the front half and the back half, that you will see a consistent story. And when you start seeing inconsistencies between what's reported in the front half and what the story that the numbers tell you in the back half, that's when confidence starts to dwindle. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, to me, coherence is very, very important, or consistency, whatever we want to use the right word. I think it's more than linkages, actually, in that respect. You can link anything.
Jay Ho?
We've got some comments from one AOSS member. Australia generally agrees that the proposed guidance would support the provision of relevant information to primary users, but Australia has some suggestions to make. One suggestion is that the role of management's commentary should be more clearly spelled out in comparison with other types of wide corporate reporting, such as sustainability report. So by doing this, Australia think that the information in management commentary will be better positioned within the whole package of wide corporate reporting. And second question is that the content elements in management commentary could be better aligned to the content elements in the integrated reporting framework. So for example, as previous speaker already mentioned, business opportunities could be identified as part of content elements together with risk. And also, the basis of preparation could be identified as part of content elements in order to outline the basis for determining materiality, stakeholder engagement process, and audience and content. Thank you.
Noble.
Thank you. We have general comments on this question and the next. We support the concepts and the general direction of the project, and however, we had the impression that we're getting mixed messages as to whether you would like to have a principle-based guidance or more detailed guidance with more or less a checklist kind of approach. And obviously, we do support the principle-based approach so that companies have the flexibility of organizing the information in the way they can tell their own story.
Watchfully is into line.
I think if that point is made clear, that would help us.
Tommaso.
I will be very quick, since, I mean, we're not really having a long debate on this, but the discussion I followed now tells me that there are three points. No, we have said the coherence, the clear and conciseness of the information. I know that I agree with Patrick. I mean, coherent is still obvious that it should be coherent. Maybe it could be better defined, but on the other side, you could just say it shouldn't be incoherent, no? The information given. It should be clear, obviously. What I note in the past, debating with analysts, is really the issue is how much the volume of information given. And so I think that the more in this paper is said that the narrative should be concise, as was said by Nick, I think would have a lot of merits, because really I have many times received people telling me we receive tons of information, so we get lost on that.
Raymond?
Again, I think oftentimes we get comments about IFRS has become complicated and a set of financial statements, nobody actually reads them, and it's difficult to understand what we're talking about and that sort of thing. And I think for me, certainly from the discussions that we've had with our various stakeholders, narrative that would enable context to be placed on the financial statements is going to be a very welcome thing. Similar to what Patrick was speaking about earlier on, is there a way of putting the information together and packaging the information in such a way that people are able to then understand, put context into the numbers that have been put together in a set of financial statements and whatever report you're putting out there? I think that would be a most welcome position to be in. The amount of information that is then provided, I think, is also quite important, because you also don't want people to be to be lost in the detail. So. The information, the reporting being concise, I mean, focusing on conciseness, I think that will certainly be an important factor. But then there's also another aspect to it, which I know we've been trying to steer away from it for a while, which is how much of this information is then forward-looking. While it may talk to put into context what has happened in the past, but there may also be an element of a need to bring in an element of forward-looking information in there. And I agree with the whole concept of let's not provide a checklist, but rather provide a principles-based approach. Because I think the minute you've got a principles-based approach, then I think there's ability there for companies to then make their own decisions about what information they're going to include and what they won't include in the reports that they're providing. The concern that I would have with a checklist-type approach is that it's difficult to police every single type of situation. So we just need to bear that in mind as part of the process.
Again, yeah.
No, just a quick reaction to the term concise. I'm wondering if we are not on the wrong track as regards the term concise, because yes, I'm going to say what is the end and then come back on why. I think that in a digital world, the quantity of information is not an issue. What is the issue is the capacity to read different levels and to have hyperlinks and to move down, drill down further. So you need a concise layer, of course, which is structure, which is some sort like the table of content of a book, and then you drill down, you have more, you want more, you drill down further. So concise for me, if you apply it to we need to change the paradigm in a digital world. Information, and there is a host of information all over the place. The problem is more how you read it, how you access it, and also what is the quality and the level of governance accountability on each and every information.
But I think you need a place somewhere where you are able to read the story, the strategy of a company in 10 pages without having to go through 400.
That's the executive summary.
I think I'd agree with you, Patrick, that I think conciseness in the way that I view it would not necessarily be that everything has got to fit into 10 pages. It may be a 100-page document, but I've got to have somewhere where when I look through, if it's a contents page, whatever it is, I can get a bird's eye view of what the issues are. And I can then decide, well, do I want to drill down further into this? If I want to drill down further, then that information is available.
I think most companies do that. They have the MD&A, for example. They have a 5-page summary. They have the MD&A, which is 40 pages.
Press release.
And then they have the 200-page financial. So it's not different from people.
And maybe 500 and maybe 1,000, because if you...
I draw the line at that.
Pretty much the way it's organized today. So it's,
sorry.
Okay.
Could I just ask one question in terms of, we obviously agree we want to keep it principles-based, and what we try to do with the guidance is give illustrations. And I know we listed some things, but I guess in terms of finding that balance, do you find the illustrations helpful, and should that be included within the guidance?
Illustrations are helpful. I'm a little concerned that people will look at it and say, well, that's prescriptive. That's what we need to do. I think we've got to be very clear that this is an example of what the reporting could potentially look like, but it should be obvious. But some people will not look at it in quite the same way.
I think, like Linda said, don't underestimate the importance of this. So I think some illustrations of what, especially for what is not. You gave a good example here of what it is, but what is not is I think it's important.
Okay.
Okay, so next we would like to discuss the proposed guidance aimed at promoting a long-term view in management commentary. That is guidance on identifying and reporting matters that could affect the entity's long-term success. And this includes the discussion of intangibles. The revised objective of management commentary is linked to users' assessments of the entity's future net cash inflows to the entity and management stewardship of the entity's economic resources. Information to meet this objective implies information on longer-term matters. We are then proposing additional guidance to support this. On slides 25 and 26, we have set out the proposed guidance on the resources and relationships that an entity depends on. The guidance does not prescribe a list of resources and relationships that a management commentary should include, as this would not be practical nor apply in full to every entity, nor necessarily include all possible relevant relationships and resources. Instead, the guidance provides categories of resources and relationships that management commentary may need to discuss if applicable to the circumstances of the entity. Intangibles such as expertise, know-how, and reputation are captured within the list of resources. To support a long-term view, management commentary should provide additional information about those resources and relationships whose continued availability and strength could affect the prospects for future net cash inflows to the entity. Therefore, information on the availability and replenishment of resources and the strength, life cycle, and the level of dependency on those relationships would also need to be provided. as set out on slide 27, the staff proposed that management commentary should describe the impact of the entity's business activities on its resources and relationships, whether positive or negative, if those impacts could affect the prospects for future net cash inflows. Information on the impact of the entity's, business activities would help primary users evaluate the longer-term sustainability of its business model. Slides 28 to 29 describe the staff's proposed approach intended to provide a longer-term view of an entity's strategy. Instead of referring to particular timeframes, we suggest that management commentary should cover three aspects of strategy. It should be anchored in the entity's long-term purpose or mission, and then the discussion of objectives, which would address medium-term strategy, should be linked to the pursuit of the entity's purpose, while the discussion of more immediate plans should then be linked to the objectives, as well as the trends and factors in the entity's operating environment. Slide 29 summarizes what information we would expect to see on purpose, objectives, and plans. Slides 30 to 31 summarize how we intend to promote identification and provision of information of trends and factors in the operating environment and on risks that could affect the entity's long-term success. The proposed guidance on discussing trends and factors in the operating environment on slide 30 would ask management to discuss those trends and factors that have not yet crystallized, but could affect the entity's business model, strategy, or its performance, position, or progress. These trends and factors should include long-term factors which may crystallize over a period further into the future, and these could include climate change effects and the emergence of new technology. For risks, the staff proposed that management consider sources of risks, identifying risks arising from long-term features of the entity's business model, strategy, and the operating environment. Finally, slide 32 illustrates how we propose to promote a long-term view in reporting the entity's performance, position, and progress. To do so, the proposed guidance would explicitly ask management to report on the progress in managing the features of the entity's business model that the entity depends on for its long-term success, which would also address progress in managing risks and opportunities. The second question is whether you agree that this proposed guidance would promote providing a long-term view in management commentary, and do you think that any additional guidance is needed, or if there are any aspects of the proposed guidance that are not necessary? Thank you.
Patrick.
I think it's a good idea to put the emphasis on the positive sides, because because there is a huge amount of there is a big paradox at the moment. People consider that non-financial information should concentrate on risks and potential negative impacts on the profitability of the company if you take the investor approach. But if you have a look, the paradox is amazing, because if you follow that route, it means that technically speaking, accounting financial statements do not capture future liabilities that are going to emerge. So therefore, you have a significant part of the population that consider that maybe there should be more risks taken into account, and therefore we should reduce profit and equity. But the paradox is that when you have a look at the market cap, between book value and market cap, you have a huge gap. So it's extremely difficult to solve, and I have no solution, of course. You should somehow consider that there are Damocles swords hanging over the current book value, probably a level of overestimation, overestimate, when in fact markets are recognizing a much higher value. So putting the emphasis, even, and by the way, all frameworks that are available for, or most frameworks that are available for non-financial information concentrate on risks much more than on the positive aspects of intangible. And therefore, you have references to a certain extent, and it's easy to follow that route and say, okay, we want to know if, for instance, greenhouse gas emissions were valued at that price, what would be the cost for the company. But you forget the brands, you forget the human resources, the hidden capital of human resources, etc. So I think that having a balanced approach, even if it's difficult, is a key element of management and forward-looking information for businesses.
I think, unlike the previous discussion about narrative coherence, which probably applies to MD&As and management commentaries provided on a quarterly basis, I think that discussion here is a more long-term, have a more longer-term view and probably more stable in terms of probably the factors, the matters that affect entities' long-term performance don't change every quarter. So this is a more stable document in terms of what companies would release, would disclose. And I see a enormous similarity here between what you're doing here and integrated reporting six capitals framework. It's huge, huge. I don't know how much you've been inspired by that, but it's enormous discussion.
Not at all. No, I'm kidding.
Coherence between the two, yes.
Yeah, some companies are doing is that on an annual basis, they are bringing the integrated reporting to the MD&A. So, and what are they doing is that the MD&A is there is a first section where they exactly do that using the six capital framework. So I think the six capital framework is already there, is well tested. I think that you should make a reference to this at least and say, well, because companies are, well, more than 5,000 companies release some sort of that of IR. So it's conflicting to have this document here in the integrated report and how those two things work. Could I do an integrated report? And my integrated report fulfilled this section here of the management commentary. Yes. My initial feeling is yes. Mm-hmm. So this is interesting to be mentioned. So in the line of the IR and how the IR should discuss, I don't want to go into the content. You may disagree with the content, but after J.P. Morgan did the last year was that. So they got an integrated speech. They don't call it integrated report, but they did an integrated speech. Then they go to MD&A, then they go to the financials. I think this is one alternative.
Raymond?
Patrick used the word positive. Then in the very last sentence, used the word balance. I don't know if the intention was that the report must be balanced, ultimately.
Yes.
Okay, because I think we just need to make sure we emphasize that part of it. Because I think the minute you start to emphasize more the one aspect more than the other, mm-hmm. more than other aspects, I think we also then will come off the rails very, very quickly.
If I may, I was only reacting to the current trend, which is putting more emphasis on the negative than on the positive. And therefore, the emphasis put on the positive here is not the only way, but it introduces a balanced information, which I think is important.
Paul?
Thank you. In terms of specifically to the question, yes, fully agree with the staff proposals that looking about the things that's going to affect the long-term success. Totally agree with Patrick, it's got to be balanced. I didn't take it, and I think your follow-up comments clarified that. I didn't take from what I read in the slides that this was trying to promote just the negatives. But
on the contrary.
Yeah. I wonder whether there is a little too much focus on cash flows and looking at performance more generally. Now, ultimately, in one form or other, it will come back to cash flow, but I think there's perhaps a little bit, readers of it or people trying to apply it might think a little bit too short-term in it, and therefore I think by looking at value or performance more generally will probably help for the longer-term perspective that you're really trying to get here. And again, emphasise balance, because rather than which I think Patrick's concern, which is perhaps companies overemphasizing the negatives. That may be what the frameworks might be pushing towards. It isn't what I see that companies are doing, in that I think that too often it is too rosy a picture that they are actually presenting. So it's important that there is balance in terms of the reflections of where they think the opportunities are and how they're going to manage the risks against achieving those opportunities.
Yes, my feedback is consistent with what has been said, so equal emphasis to be placed to risks and opportunities. And also, sometimes there is a focus on cash flows, future cash flows. Other times, like in page 27, it's clarified that there are elements in the ESG camp that may equally affect the sustainability of the business other than the cash flow. So maybe the concept of value creation could offer a better basis to identify what you're trying to achieve. Finally, I think in page 23, we were expecting even more emphasis on the intangibles, which are mentioned, but we would have expected more visibility on that.
Sorry, just a reaction, if I may. I struggle a lot with the theory of pre-financial, because at the end of the day, everything is pre-financial. The fact that it will end up in a cash flow, there is no doubt. It will end up in a monetary shape and form at a moment in time. The problem is not that. The problem is the timing. And of course, the assessment of how much it can be, what could be in the future. So for me, of course, you want to see at the end of the day, in terms of monetary translation, mm-hmm. what it will look like. But, you know, if Hans is the CEO of a very large company and if he gets a cold, that can have an influence one day, because checking the health of the CEO is important. Checking the balance of the governance is important. You can, from that, derive at a moment in time a counter-performance. So I'm just saying it's difficult to isolate ESG and cash flows, because the notion of pre-financial is difficult to interpret if you don't put the timing on it.
That's true, but equally, it's very much possible that a company continues damaging the environment for a very, very long time. The oil industry, for example.
Mm-hmm. But that's an urgency. You know, the timing is today.
Albert, so classical ESG reporting would state, "Yeah, we are damaging the environment." Mm-hmm. If that is going. This can still go on for 50 years. And I'm not sure if that will, in the short term, have an impact on the cash flows of the company.
Because, if I may, they are not the only decision makers. If they have freedom to put their waste and to damage the environment forever because regulations and laws does not impose anything, any obligation on them, then it's not their fault, because they can decide to do it on a voluntary basis, but they are not obliged to do it. And the basis for accounting is obligation to a certain extent. Yeah. And we are not yet in a compulsive obligation, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we...
That's why I think there is still a difference between ESG reporting
and cash flows.
And, reporting that looks primarily at the future value or the future cash flows of a company. I agree with you. It's difficult to separate, but I think for a lot of companies, ESG reporting will remain divorced from the future value of a company for a long, long time.
I think if you look at a tobacco company today, the ESG report of tobacco company, they did say, well, what affects my cash flows at the moment is the litigation that I'm facing, but I have a bigger issue, which is my product can be banned, completely banned, yeah, in some countries. So they say, well, that's affecting today, and that's going to affect tomorrow. So.
And we replace it with cannabis.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kidding.
Well, I have a very quick comment. If I look back a year ago, or more than that, I remember the reason why we started this project, touching this practice statement, management commentary, is because we decided to revise this practice statement rather than working on the new project on intangibles or wider corporate reporting. So in this sense, I'm very happy to hear about this future and long-term success in this project. This is consistent with our past decision about the future, which might be a little bit different from Patrick's concern about past and future. Okay.
Nick.
Yeah, just two brief comments. Users, of course, are looking for a balanced report, an objective assessment of both opportunities and risks. So I think that's very important. And then I was just intrigued by Alexandra's observations about the six capitals framework kind of almost appearing or seeming to appear. So we do have the Integrated Reporting Council represented on our consultative group. So we've learnt about their principles, and I think those are partly reflected. But the precise framework clearly isn't for everyone, and that's feedback we've also heard. Some people don't like that six capital approach. So I think if we can capture those principles, which we seem to have done, but without necessarily going that whole endpoint to the six capitals, I think hopefully we get the best of both worlds with that.
Anne?
On the topic of balance and the strategic report, I would like to ask Paul if he could share anything with us about the strategic report. When introduced, really went after the concept of balanced information, to the extent that I had preparers telling me they took out all the adjectives to achieve this balance. But I wonder if there's anything you can share with us, Paul, that you learned in terms of how you presented the requirements in order to achieve the balance that you wanted. And with hindsight, is there something that you would have done differently?
It's a very difficult question. I think if I was going to do something differently, it would be to change the auditor obligations in respect of the review of the strategic report, whereas what they have to do at the moment is report by exception if they consider the information that's in the strategic report is inconsistent with their knowledge of the business as a result of their audit. I think if you turn that round to requiring them to make a positive assertion that it is consistent, I think you'd get more of the balance at the moment. Because my personal view is there is insufficient balance in the reports at the moment. I don't think the FRC just saying you've got to be more balanced is going to change anything. It's those that actually understand the detail, making sure that the report, when it's finalised, does cover both the opportunities and the potential risks. I think the very good companies provide the audit committee with some form of report of how the those preparing the strategic report have considered whether it's fair, balanced, and fair, balanced, and understandable, which is a corporate governance code requirement, is comprehensive in our law, which underpins the strategic report. But they have to consider that. I don't think we're there yet by any stretch of the imagination. We've had chairs of the largest companies come in and talk to us about that, and have effectively told us that that pushing this too hard is not going to be a fruitful exercise from the FRC alone, because of fear from the chairs that if they fully disclosed what was really troubling them and what the really provide a balanced report, that it would be misconstrued by investors. Now, my answer to that was, well, actually, if you don't provide it through your eyes, others will make it up for you, and you'll be in a worse position. And what investors, in my view, investors look for, not necessarily, they of course expect every business to have its challenges. What they want to see is what management are doing to address those challenges. So just reporting them isn't going to be good enough. It's and what action are you taking? So it's a very long-winded answer to your question, which is we haven't got the answer yet. It's getting better each year. It's very hard from an enforcer perspective to enforce fair, balanced and comprehensive, because unless you really know what's going on in the business, it's difficult to know whether it fully reflects everything known to management at the time. But we're working on it.
Thank you.
But I can imagine why you initially took the decision to ask the auditor to state that it is not inconsistent.
Yeah.
Because for the auditor to sort of audit the future, and a strategic report has a lot of future forward-looking information.
Yes.
That, I mean, they already have enough trouble auditing the past.
but the strategic report, I mean, and again, the emphasis perhaps being stimulated by question two is around the forward-looking information. The strategic report and the management commentary is also going to provide a commentary on the past as well.
Yeah. But it has one of the reasons why you need management commentary is that the financial statements are too exclusively looking at the past, and you want to tell your forward story as well.
But auditors tell us that they have very little leverage with the board in terms of where they think that perhaps the information is a little bit exaggerated in the strategic report. They don't really have much authority to require directors to change it. And I think positive reporting might change that slightly, just change that dynamic slightly.
Marcia.
Thank you. My experience, and I want to talk about the long-term nature of the disclosures. In my experience, the marketplace would hold management accountable for really shorter-term performance, maybe intermediate-term performance when there's an acquisition integration or something about a restructuring, how are you doing along that, et cetera. In the U.S., we have the risk factor elements of our SEC filings, and those tend to address a lot of what you have captured in the relationship listings, information about suppliers, information about customers, information about employers. And in my experience, what was always interesting about those disclosures were when they would change. But the only way someone would identify a change in one of those relationships is comparing and contrasting a previous disclosure with the current disclosure, because there was really nothing in the filing that highlights when some of those longer-term experiences or risks change. So I just wanted to kind of share that, because I've heard some of the comments. I read in the material a concern, the acknowledgement that long-term opportunities and risks don't change that often. So it could become very boilerplate. And if that were to become boilerplate, would that be as useful to the users as something that talked more about an assessment about how some of these relationships, your long-term view of these relationships, and have they changed over a particular period of time? And the other observation I would just share as, creating an opportunity for management to talk about its opportunities, I always think that that's valuable. But again, it seems to me, again, as a preparer, I always try to strike the right balance to make sure that operating management was not giving me information that could become a marketing document. Sometimes some of those assessments are really better in the hands of an analyst that's independent. So striking the right balance is important to the usefulness of the end product, it seems to me.
Just wanted to follow up on what Paul was saying following Anne's question. I agree that if the auditors have a good look at non-financial information or management commentary, it improves the quality, I'm sure. However, there are two prerequisites in my mind. The first one is to go further in terms of classification of the information and qualification of the information, because as you said, you cannot have the same level of assurance on a retrospective quantitative indication, which you can say, yes, I have checked and it's okay. It's a full reasonable assurance, and a forward-looking target or trend, which is only, I wouldn't say speculation, but at best a commitment. So that's prerequisite number one. Prerequisite number two is that governance be involved at the highest level. Because if, you know, at the moment you have very strict rules in terms of approval of financial information before this information is being released. So non-financial information at a point in time should follow, and you were mentioning the best in class should follow a similar route. If we don't, I mean, there will be a disconnect between the two levels of information, the two legs of the corporate information.
I was going to comment on something Marsh said, but just on that last point, the strategic report has to be approved by the directors. So, and I would assume that the management commentary would need the same sort of thing. So the governance does apply. I was going to pick up two things that Marsha said. First of all, the changing nature of the risks and spotting whether they've changed from one year to the next. Almost all major UK groups actually put a chart and show whether the risk is improving, deteriorating, or staying much the same, which I think addresses the concern you have. I think one of the challenges that we've faced, and it's particularly acute with entities that also have an SEC registration, which is pushing companies to disclose their principal risks, not every possible risk that existed. And I know, security lawyers will encourage directors to put in a kitchen sink list of risks, because that's the best way of protecting the directors against litigation. I know from some experience some years ago, explaining to the security lawyer that was asked to challenge me about putting a going concern emphasis of merit paragraph in my audit report. And when I explained to him, why I needed to do it, and he said, why doesn't every company have one? That will safeguard the directors. Don't worry, Paul. I'll make sure the directors fully understand this and accept it. And that's a completely different mentality to of how risks are considered.
Okay. Just a reaction to Marsha's comment about perception, reality with reality of dealing with investors. I think investors are a very heterogeneous group. I just talk about my experience in dealing with North American investors, European investors, and Asian investors. Normally, you sit down to American investors. I even have a different material because they open their computer and they start to look at, what about next quarter? What about your margin for next quarter? What's going to happen? It's amazing. Very rare the discussion goes two quarters. Okay. That's why they have conferences. They've had so many conferences because the conference lasts for one quarter or two. When it comes to this country, for example, we're talking British investors or in Asia, the same thing. Normally, you don't even show your quarter results. They don't even ask you about your quarter results. I had the opportunity to do a non-deal roadshow in about 5 days here, and you're only talking about integrated reporting and strategic, et cetera. So there's a huge difference about the investor's perspective relating to funds. So I think that document should try to fill both approaches.
All right. Are we done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's
take a, we are a bit early, I think, but not much. So let's break until 1:30. Yeah?